Good afternoon, Muskegon. It's that time for Torn Into, your show for news, information, and more. Hi, I'm your host, Gregory T. Roberts. Before I get my co-host in, let's go over the weather. It is about 70 degrees outside. Your high will be 71. And from Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, by the time it gets to Monday, look for 80 degrees plus, no chance of rain. So it's looking good for Memorial Day. Hey, sis, already on the air. How you doing? I'm from Atlanta, Georgia. Tanya Roberts Ford, how you doing? And we'll be talking about you later. All right, so let me talk to you a little bit about, well, let me get our co-host, Pastor, one of the twins, Melvin Burns. What's happening, brother?
Hey, my brother, how you doing today?
You know what? Let me say this. I want to say to the people that are listening, let me do some housekeeping, by the way. If you are listening to the show and would like to watch the show in the future, just go to WVS 103.7 to B or M106. Their Facebook sites, you can see the show. Also, we have a YouTube page as well, WVS 103.7 to Beat. And so there's many a way in the Emoji app, which is that's a fantastic. Matter of fact, I'm getting ready to run that at the bottom of the hour, that commercial, so people can see that. But this is what I want to say. And Pastor Melvin, I want your input before we get our guests in.
Okay.
This is Memorial Day weekend. We're supposed to be celebrating the people lost and fighting wars. And just, we're supposed to be celebrating with our family and friends out there going to buy my ribs at Sam's Club or wherever, Scotch Meat or whatever. But we got to be sitting up here wasting our time today talking about the debt ceiling.
Yeah. Well,
go ahead. I mean, you know what? I'm so mad at them, right? All the parties. Don't blame it on one party. I'm mad at all of them. And let me get this before you speak. Let me say this. Secondly, for you people that are not smart enough to know when gas prices go up, don't look at the president. It's called greed. It's called Shell. It's called Cisco. It's called Mobile. All their boardrooms raising the gas prices up. That's where it's happening. I'm just speaking it like it is. Pastor Burr.
You know, I think they're getting ready to go on vacation without this being done. Every party, every president raises the debt ceiling. So negotiate something. If you have to be some cuts, nobody likes it, but you have some cuts, you have some concessions. But again, we keep getting frustrated that things don't get done.
Again, that don't get done. But
give me something that we like a little bit and don't like so much, but gets done.
Well, speaking of getting something done, let's introduce our guest. They have a show on Saturday dealing with finance. He's no stranger to the show. He's been on a few times, and we want to thank him for stepping in. Put your hands together for Chauncey, R. Williams. How you doing, sir?
All right. Pretty good. Hey, good fellas doing, Melvin and Gregory. Thank you and appreciate you for having me on today. Like you said, 103.7 The Beat, me and my counterpart Tony Williams does What Do I Do Now? Well, basically he the expert, and I'm the person that's learning from him and gleaning from his 30 years of wisdom and some of my experience. And just, it's a pleasure to be with you guys today and just talking about raising the roof. That's what I call it, raising the roof.
Raising the roof. Now, before we start, already, Tanya says, stop their paychecks and that would accomplish everything. You know what? This is right. One thing that people will say it will. I don't think no. I think no.
No, no.
I think absolutely no about stopping. Go ahead, Pastor.
When 75% of my millionaires put it got in the Congress, it won't matter. It won't matter. But the majority of them don't live off that check.
Say that again.
The majority don't live off that check. That's why some things aren't important like they're important to you and I.
And how many are millionaires?
I think it's around 75%.
Okay. All right.
I might be low, to be honest. Although if you're not a millionaire before you go in, you'll be when you get out.
So Chauncey, talk to us about the debt ceiling and for our listeners and viewers that don't understand what the debt ceiling is all about.
I mean, it's been going on for forever almost. And when you think about it, it's always been something that I've seen as a checks and balances system between the Democrats and Republicans, right? Like where you can sit down and say, we're gonna raise this ceiling. Like why, right? And when it comes to Democrats and Republicans, they're always divided when it comes to spending money, right? Or investing in the corporate America. So when it's the Democrats' turn, it's always an issue and a problem, right? It's a holdup. But then when it's the Republicans' turn, it's like, hey, we need to make this happen. So it's always been a way where we could possibly get rid of it. But then if we get rid of it, is that a free fall or is it a way to say, hey, let's do it, right? And then when you think about the numbers, you're talking about $31 trillion when we're trying to increase a debt ceiling. And then just looking at that debt over the history, I had pulled some numbers and I said, okay, 30% of that is of Barack Obama, right? Mm-hmm. He'd been in how long? 8 years, right? Then you think about the next person, you got Trump, 25%. In his 4 years, he contributed 25% to that debt. George Bush, he did how many years? 8, right, as a president? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 16%.
Okay.
Then you got Biden, 3 years, almost three, four years, he got 12%. So then when you look at debt ceiling and who contributed to the issue and the problem, look what we got going on. We done had what? 2 unpaid wars, right?
Yeah.
We got 3 recessions and a global pandemic we just been through. Mm-hmm. We can't raise the ceiling. We can't. We can't.
What? Now here's my thing. And enlighten me. Why is the richest, quote unquote, richest country in the world borrowing money and giving away money as fast as they can?
Yeah, we borrow and giving it away. It's like coming to America to invest, right? Send us your best. But in the same time, we borrow it, but we giving out money. But then I remembered, I think it probably started during COVID, when the G7 Council got together, right? Mm-hmm. Where this global economy is coming out with America being one of the forerunners and one of the leaders of that concept. Mm-hmm. But then what does that do to a global economy when we loaning out money and we borrowing money and we got people that's probably not a part of that system and say, hey, what's going on over here, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. What are you doing? And when you think about Democrats and Republicans and a global economy, who are some of our partners in this system? And then we have a president that's been around in politics for how long? Since 76, 78? Mm-hmm. So who has he done something to? And who does he have to do something for? So when he sits down with the Republicans and say, hey, Biden, what about 83? When I asked you to do such and such, what about 91, right? You don't know who he owes a favor in any capacity. And some people could say, well, that's not like that. No, it's like that. When it comes to politics, they hold their grudges. When it comes to you getting what you need, when you in, and when I was in, or when my constituents was in, you didn't give me what I need, I'm gonna let it go. But it's never happened, right? Mm-hmm. We always found a way to either have, because it's a discrepancy here, right? You got a shutdown and you got the debt ceiling, right? So you got the default and a shutdown. There's a difference between the two. And okay. When you think about personal finance, you talk about if you default on a credit card, that means it's done. You're in collections and it's trouble coming, right?
Right.
You late. But then when you talk about a shutdown, now we're going to walk away from this. We're going to take a recess. We're going to figure out how to pay this bill still. We'll extend this. So we got this date that's coming up and we celebrating, right? We got ready to celebrate a holiday. But we got June 1st, but then we got a float date of the middle of June, June 15th. And when we think about that, let's think about our country. Like you said, wealthiest in America, wealthiest in the world. We're supposed to be one of the strongest. So when we think about that, let's think about everything that's in the public sector that's being ran. Housing, right? Public housing, city, things that happens in cities, Medicaid, Social Security. Who's going to lose out if the debt ceiling is not raised?
Come on now, say it.
Is it the underserved communities, right? Is it the working man, the lower middle class, the middle class? Who's going to feel the ripple effect if we don't raise the ceiling?
Okay, let's go to the board because people are coming in. Now, going back to Atlanta, what about the $1.6 trillion that the Republicans gave to the rich when Trump was in the office? And then let's to Michael Anthony Smith from Houston, Texas. It's just party politics. It will get done. Okay, yes, Chauncey.
They're right. It will get done, but it's just like they said, loaning out money. Who can loan out the money? And it's the party politics. It's the game that they're going to play with each other until the deadline, right? And it just happens repeatedly over and over and over again till the checks and balances. But my thing is, if we get rid of it, what's going to happen? If we get rid of we don't need debt ceiling anymore, what's going to be the alternative to that? Is that a free-for-all? If we just, because we can get rid of it, right? Mm-hmm. But what is that? What does that look like to get rid of it? What do you think, fella?
Well, I think we have that cylinder because it reminds us you can't just spend. So there's a point when you say, okay, no, my credit card got a limit on it. That's to remind me that when you get to that point, you probably can't make these payments no more. You spend way more than you should.
Mm-hmm.
So now, when I get that limit, my credit card company might let me raise my limit, which, they don't mind. But at some point, Melvin ought to say, maybe I ought to spend a little less. And so I think it's there to kind of remind us, okay, now this is how much you got there. But my question to you is, I'm Melvin Burns. I work at X Factory in Muskegon. I make 20 bucks an hour. Why does this matter to me?
Why does that matter to you?
Why does this debt ceiling thing? Why do I even need to be concerned about it? Just go to work and let them do what they're gonna do. Because some people are really upset about it, and some people like me, I go to work, I don't pay no attention. Is it something I should care about?
I mean, definitely. Like I just said, like when you talk about the public sector, what if somebody say, hey, the Social Security check not gonna come? These benefits are not gonna be paid. You can't go to the doctor because I was accepting these kind of benefits and they're not paying me right now. Right.
Okay.
And you're looking at hold up, my whole city shut down because we were getting public funding and the debt ceiling. We don't even have the money to pay our bills. That's what you talked about, right? So we don't have the money to pay our bills. That's a default. So that means you don't get services anymore. Who do you know that's going to keep on showing up to do something for free? Oh, we'll do it. Your check coming. Your check will be here in 6 months.
Let's go back to Atlanta. Tanya Roberts Ford, the lower class will be the ones who suffer if we have to have a shutdown. Chauncey, your thoughts?
She's exactly right. That's what I thought about all the services that's put in place to make sure all our American citizens receive equity across plane, right? We talk about food, clothing, healthcare, right? Shelter, right? Transportation, all those things in the public sector that makes life, I would say, not easier, but where somebody can live in a space and have a lifestyle. So when those things are removed, what happens to that person that just was trying to make ends meet and they don't have that service there?
Which brings me to this point. They talk about in politics about the mom and pop businesses and how we need to support them, but it's also going to affect those small businesses, correct?
Yes, small businesses, they get portions of their funding from public sector also.
So you looking at right now with the debt ceiling, okay, Congress right now is playing when we're on the verge of a recession. Interest rates are high, where they're trying to get those down. Wall Street is nervous right now because of how close they are. And they're sitting up playing games as politics as usual when we're in an environment when if they mess up, all hell will break loose, Chauncey.
You're saying at least half. I was talking to Tony yesterday, and we were talking about this, Tony Williams, and he said, if the debt ceiling don't be raised or we go into a default, look at the stock market to lose 50%. Mm. So just imagine, like, whoever got money invested, 50%, you close to retirement or you trying to have a nest egg to be in some type of equities or in a mutual fund or something, and you lose 50%.
Your 401k hit.
Yeah. Sliced in half. So you're like, I'm going to retire in a couple years. And they say, oh, half your money gone because they didn't raise the debt ceiling. they couldn't reach an agreement. That's the issue. But then let's go here. Who do we blame for it? Because last time we was in the green was what? Bill Clinton, right?
Mm-hmm.
So who do we blame for where we at today? Even though like one of our listeners said, party politics, this is going to happen. Mm-hmm. But who do, when you look at the string of presidents and people that was in place, who do we blame?
Don't blame Monica Lewinsky.
We were in the green with Clinton. Is it because we were not, were we pushing for a global economy? What was it? What was it that made him be in the green and where we're at today, where we done had to, because we raised the debt ceiling more than a dozen times since then, right?
Yeah. The 78 times, separate times. 49 times under Republican president and 29 times under Democrat presidents. Let's go to Houston.
Repeat that again.
Okay. 78 separate times, 49 times under Republican presidents and 29 times under Democrat presidents. Let's go to Houston, Texas, Michael Anthony Smith. The dollar has no value without a debt ceiling.
Okay.
Your point. And then look at the discrepancy you just said. That's double when the Republicans got their way, 49 versus 29. Mm-hmm. It's almost double.
So, Chauncey, let me ask you a question. Should we be, thinking of the debt ceiling? I know when we've had, like, I think in a Bush year and a couple of Obama years, we had some drops in the overall debt. Should we be thinking about in terms of we got to have this Senate, but we should, of course, we know Congress changes, but we should be looking at it as can we, over a period of 50, 20 years, steadily bring it down? Because just like some people are telling me, we'll probably never get to zero debt, and that's probably unrealistic. But should we be looking over a period of time? Should we be looking to bring it down? Because your earlier comments seem to say, look, two wars, COVID, it's kind of not unreasonable to think we had to raise debt ceiling. We're still COVID affected economy. No, world economy, I should say.
We live in it, and I would say this. I'm gonna follow you up, Melvin. This is the effects of long COVID right here, but not like somebody getting sick. Our country's sick.
Okay.
Right. When
it comes to the finance, we got a long COVID here. It's like the lag that we like. Okay, this happened. Here's the lag behind that. But then, as things are becoming more expensive, your regular automobile is not your regular automobile. The average cost of the car is not the same. Mm-hmm. The cost to manufacture it. Even going to making that transition from going to from gas, combustible engine to electric, and what natural resources are required, lithium, right? And how expensive that is to extract. So all those factors of like, if we cut down on spending, we're not going to be able to advance our economy or our technology. Mm-hmm. We have to do something.
So I like what you're saying. It's like you can't just look at the debt number and say it's a debt number. You got to look at what's happening in the economy. You know, look, $5 trillion today ain't the same as $5 trillion 30 years ago.
No. Look at all the
other buying power is a lot different.
Yeah, I like the way you say that. You know, it makes it a little clearer again. You know, hopefully our listeners kind of get, you know, people tend to look at one factor. If it's a debt, you know, in the ceiling, don't spend anymore. And there's other, you know, I think the economy just taught us, tell us, you know, nothing's ever in a vacuum by itself. There's always other things happening at the same time.
Yeah. You know, like what my financial planner always say, follow the dip, right? So when you think about the dip, it's like, okay, are we in that portion of the economy was like, okay, we in this. We try to work with this G7. We're getting this global economy started. We're changing from gas engines to electric, right? We're doing all these things with alternative resources, from building homes, to how we're doing our streets, right? How we're changing industry and how we're trying to, we're using AI, all these other advancements that technology is coming in. Will the dip eventually help that we accelerate, but then generate an economy that can able to produce more that we can leverage that balance when you're talking about we got this debt? Because a lot of times we say we got to have a budget, we got to cut spending. Mm-hmm. But if we cut spending, what does that do to our advancement? Like, oh, we can't spend money here. Like, okay, let's take it here. Infrastructure, right? That's been a big problem. Right? We need bridges, we need roads, right? And you work in that department, Mr. Burns, and people are always critical. It's like, look at the rest of the country. We can't just look at a small city. If you ride through the country, you'll see bridges, right? Roads, from trains, from tracks, all these things that are not right when it comes to our infrastructure. So do we say, oh, no, cut spending, we'll just keep on managing the buildings from 1950s, right? We'll just keep on going here. We won't use solar. We won't figure out how to advance our technology, or we won't even educate our citizens in a different way, right?
Right.
So we got to push, or we're gonna be behind, and we're going to loan out our whole country and not have anything.
Let's go back to the board, back to Atlanta, Georgia, Tyler Roberts Ford. It's going to be some slow singing and flower bringing if half of my 401k is slashed in half. Chauncey.
Yes, sir.
If you look at the thing with when we talk about this debt ceiling, and they talk about depending on what party the saying on, okay, what you got to cut, and some say what you need to keep. My thing is, I was talking to you, is that we're set up and supposed to be the richest country in the world, but yet we're giving money to Ukraine like crazy. Just for instance, but we're not investing in the infrastructure that you're talking about here. Our country's a mess. It's sick.
Yeah. But we also need this, right? So if you think about Michigan, when you look at population growth, right? Michigan is stagnated. I think Ohio is stagnated. Where we're not having growth, our citizens are older, right? Now, some of these other countries, when we invest in a country, they have people that are trained in certain skill sets that they're not making that living wage in their country. So now we are opening up our borders and we're passing bills to make sure that we can expand our economy on a global level and a local level. Like Michigan just passed a bill for
right to work.
Yeah, back to work. You have the right to work, right? So then it's making sure that even marriage, right? So you're not doing marriage is universal now. So they're expanding the legal ways to live as a family, so you can benefit off insurance, right? You can benefit off health care. So they're trying to figure out how to expand our population and technology advance without trying to do it with having a baby. Like, okay, we can bring in a country. We can bring in this country. We can invest in them. We can bring these citizens in. They can go to school here. If we can build over here, that's going on right now. People going to study abroad. We're sending people over. They're sending people over here.
So has anybody yet looked at the fact that some of the worker shortages we have are stuck at our border?
You know, yes, I
have faith in the workforce. Seniors dropped out of the workforce after COVID. I mean, is anybody starting to say, you know, maybe this workforce that we need, we're stuck down there in California and Arizona, Mexico, not trying to get into this country?
Yes, I'm, and that's my role outside of what I'm talking about with you right now, like with the school district, where it's like we're looking at the talent pipeline. That's what they call it, right? Mm-hmm. So when it comes to the talent pipeline, they're like, oh, we got to get the kids ready, right? We got to get the citizens ready. And then our country, I say, we're going to put restorative justice in place, help the person with returning citizens, right? But then I always look at, I say, what about the kids? What about somebody that's in another country that got a skill set already? What are we going to do? We're going to put resources either to the next generation or this population that's already got skills that want to come in and work and be productive citizens. So how do we figure out to that. I think that would help us out a lot. But everybody, you know, everybody got their views and what they feel. And we got a right in America to feel that way. But I think about it all the time, Melvin, like, okay, we got a population here, but we're not, the talent is not developed. So it's like, what is it going to take to help the next generation when it comes to training? But also, who are the citizens or citizens in other countries that's getting ready to come over to in our space that has a skill set that we can invest in that country, then they can come over here and we can come over there and we can build and then we can expand our economy on a global level. So I see the plan, but I also see the dip, like, okay, we're going to lose some money, we're going to lose some resources, but then when we come out of this, look at how we can look how we look as a global economy. Even when it comes to all the alternative ways, when it comes to the crypto, right, and the other forms of electronic funding, where I mean, our money gonna be being tracked, whereas if we get rid of the dollar, they're gonna know every time you spend something too. So it's all these things coming into play that is pushback on, and we had a right to have it, but then we gotta think like, okay, what's the pushback? What do we need that's necessary to help our economy be sustainable? That's the word. Not cutting, right? Mm-hmm. Not expanding so much, but what's sustainable? What's a sustainable level that everybody can say, hey, we're at this space, this is where we're gonna grow. We're in this interval, we're in this gap, and we're gonna go from here to here. And here's the plan that we're gonna utilize. It's gonna take so many years, and by that time, we'll have this much growth, we'll have this many new jobs, because the new job reports come out, right?
Right, every Friday.
College graduates, right? All that, that's better than it was 20 years ago. It's better than it was 10 years ago. But then we got more citizens, our population, and it's education is requiring a lot more, and it's changing and advancing.
Let me give you this question, then we're going to go to commercial. Chauncey, they were talking to the U.S. Treasurer today, and he was saying, the question was asked, if they don't come up with a decision, who gets paid first? Have you guys figured this out? Who will get paid? Who will not get paid? And his answer, which blew me away, he said that our technology on paying people is so old that it does not know when to stop or who to stop paying. That was his answer.
We're in trouble then. And when you look at that, we can look at from a state level or a regional level. When you think about the unemployment payments, right? Or the SBA loans or PPP loans. Look how that system went. So if you go... You're going to prioritize who you're about to pay? And you couldn't even get out an unemployment check the right way?
Well, look, we know who's going to get prioritized. He can say that if he wants to.
Yeah, I mean, when he said that, I was blown away when he said that, Pastor Brown.
If I remember correctly, there's some people, they say debt ceiling, which theoretically can't borrow anymore, right? Can't spend anymore. And the fiscal year ends September 30th. But if I'm not mistaken, there's certain people that still got to show up for work no matter what. Military still got to show up.
Yep.
You know, people defense, you know, people doing defense work. Air traffic controllers still got to show up. So where that money coming from?
That's what we're saying when I said earlier that you're going to work for 6 months, we got you.
Yeah. You know.
Wow.
You can't do that. Because like you said, I think was it Mike that I mentioned earlier? He said party politics. That's it. Yeah. It's going to happen. It's almost like every dollar is saying God we trust, right? Mm-hmm. But then the game that's played on back of that dollar every time, right? It keeps you anxious, keep you in anxiety. And it's like, what's our true substance when it comes to thinking and saying, like you said, the working man making $20 an hour, the millionaire. If we let the political system control how we thrive in America, we in trouble. We in trouble. We trust in them to say they're gonna take care of us. That's a big issue, but that's the system, because it's called politics, right? When you get governing bodies to take the laws that was created to make man equal, spiritually and what they said they was gonna govern, and somehow they get an argument and they don't govern, and then they who loses at their expense.
Back to Atlanta, Georgia, and then we're going to commercial. And I want you guys to think about this. Tanya Roberts Ford, It don't. I don't think either party cares. They just want to win. Okay, so we're going to stop there. We're going to go to commercial. We're at the bottom of the hour. You're watching and listening to Torn and Two. We're talking about the debt ceiling. We'll see you in a couple minutes. Maybe. Hopefully. If not. Okay, well, we need to keep on going until they go into commercial. Okay, so Chauncey, party policy. Politics. What do you think?
I mean, they just, it's a back and forth. You give me what I want, I give you what you want, right? This is what it is. It's like, what are you willing to give? Give and take relationship. That's all it is. So okay. You put a bill out, I sign it, then what I'm gonna get on the back end? I put something out, you sign it, because we gotta look, everybody needs so many votes to be able to move something, right?
Mm-hmm.
So who the people that's holding the vote to say, hey, we're gonna let this go ahead, or we need three more, or we need two more. And that's the game that's being played. But like you said, everybody's a millionaire. How did they become a millionaire when they got in that space? They are led by a corporation. A corporation is leading them. They gotta cast a vote based on what that corporation wants to do. They're just a representation of companies. That's all they are. Mm-hmm. They're not representing a person. And you get people that's far in between, that's for the people, right? And when they come, they call it socialism, right? Mm-hmm. All you hear, he does this. The people that got the backing, when it comes to the billion-dollar industries, they make that movement. So it's just, we're in a tough situation, death center, like you said. But like we said, it's going to happen, right? But I just wonder, is it going to happen on June 1st, before June 1st, or is it going to happen in the middle of June? And that's going to be the scary part, of just seeing how the country going to go up in an uproar if we wait until like around June 15th.
Right now, you got 37 Republicans saying that they don't like where things are heading and they're going to hold out. You have roughly 20-some on the Democrat side don't like if the president and the speaker come up with an agreement, they don't like it, and either side said they won't vote for it. Then what?
Yeah, so then look at the ripple effect when we talked about earlier when you say the stock market, right? Wall Street. So what that's going to do to our investors, even though we know it's inevitable that it's going to happen, what is it going to do to our investors? Is it going to put doubt in people's minds when it comes to the government? Will it put doubt and nervousness in the everyday working man to say, I'm gonna put my money here and save for 10, 20, 30 years, or no, I'm gonna take it all out? What is it gonna do? What is it gonna create if we wait to make a deal at the very last minute? What kind of confusion will it spark?
And let's go back to what you said earlier. Your 401k have your business. We're talking about, this is with a serious situation. Mm-hmm. If we don't get this solved by that day.
Yep. Here's a brief example. Like we talk about the small mom and pops and private contractors, right? Mm-hmm. That's a big industry. Even when you think about Michigan, private contractors, right? Mm-hmm. They pay government dollars, counselors, rehab counselors, doctors, right? You got all these private contractors that's getting a check to be in a space, a social worker, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's like, are they going to be the first ones off the list? Because their work is necessary and needed when it comes to those spaces. Mm-hmm. So it's like, this is dangerous. I wouldn't say who's an expert on it, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm on here with you guys looking like this would be the first time in all our lifetimes that if it don't, they don't raise it.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that think they're private sector that are living on government contracts.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, a whole lot of people.
And we're talking about, and remember how close we are to a recession right now. We're very close to a recession, and them playing tiddlywinks right now and waiting to the last second, like you said, what is that doing to the stock market? What is it doing to the confidence into the what is it doing? It's making everything shaky.
Yeah, let's go here. Look, So let's think. The debt ceiling came. Why did the debt ceiling come and when did it come? World War One, right? My dad fought in World War II. So World War One, what was going on in our country? Were we by the gold standard, right? We weren't by the stock market, right? Is that right? Mm-hmm. We was driven by the gold standard. There wasn't mm-hmm. no stock market. And we put a debt ceiling in. So mm-hmm. the debt ceiling was able, like Melvin said, the credit cap, right? The credit to debt ratio. Mm-hmm. We got this much gold stored. We got this much equity in our country. This is what we're mm-hmm. doing with our money. We got this debt ceiling that keeps us at a budget, right? Mm-hmm. Going back to, that's more than 100 years ago, system that we got in place right now. That's what it is, right? Mm-hmm. That system was where we won't have what we had during World War One, where everything got wiped out, right? Mm-hmm. Talking about families being out of their home, out of their job, whole industries and manufacturing industries, whole industries shut down, right? Mm-hmm. So think about that. 100 years ago, the debt ceiling had to be in place. We need to reinvent what we're doing, because we keep on finding ourselves in a cycle that come right. Because look, last time we had a pandemic that was of this measure was during the same time.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Right? What was it called when it happened? It was in 1919,
the bird flu.
Yep, there you go. So mm-hmm. that was a big pandemic around that same time when the country shut down economic-wise and people were getting sick and dying. We just had it another 100 years. So it's like it's just a cycle repeating itself. Are we waiting to say, okay, it's coming. It's inevitable. It's coming. Don't fix the broken system. Don't do nothing to the – we're going to keep on using the same debt ceiling that was 100 years ago that worked for an old problem. But we got all this mm-hmm. new technology. Got this new way we spending. We got this electronic money. We got all this other stuff. We're going to use this 100-year-old system that helped us get out of a problem, but we really didn't get out the problem, mm-hmm. right? We still got a divided country. We still got the haves and the have-nots. We still got extreme poverty, right?
Yeah.
We still got our school buildings. We still got churches that need to be built, rebuilt, schools that need to be rebuilt, streets. Mm-hmm. So it's like going back to 1913 when they didn't have a high – when they didn't have the roads and the economic system we have, and we still in this space 100 years later.
Mm. So Chauncey, as part of your premise of looking at this is just, like you say, we're using 100-year-old solutions for a new economy. You know, and I think talked to your counterpart, Tony, about this maybe last year. Unemployment's at what, 3-4%? We used to call that full employment, but yet we got employers hanging out signs every day. You know, we complain about gas. Gas is $1.50 lower than it was a year ago. But you know, it's still trying. So, and I hadn't thought about it until you said it. And I was like, we're still using the same old tools: raise the debt limit. You know, what's unemployment? How much debt we have to try to fit into a new economy? That again, admittedly, our manufacturers haven't caught up to the economy yet. Our financial banking systems haven't caught up yet. But we're using these old measurables.
Old tools trying to solve a new problem. Old tools trying to solve a new problem that's morphing and changing, I would say, even every day.
Wow.
It's like it's moving too fast for us.
Let's go to the board. Tyler Roberts Ford said, while they're playing games, people have to decide whether they can buy food, their medications, or pay rent. Let's go back to Houston, Texas, where Michael Anthony Smith, private industries will pay their employees. Government programs, employees will suffer.
Yep, he just answered that question with the private contractor, people that's getting the money to be government employees, but they dependent on that. It's part of their income and part of their business to get the government contract to see so many employees or have so many clients for the state or for the government level, right? Yeah. And they're in space and it's like, oh, the government fund part of my job. So now that 30-40% gone, what do you do?
Yeah. I mean, you know, we have companies in town that, you know, such and such just got $50 million, $100 million government contract, and nobody ever says government shouldn't be spending that money. They go, oh, great, new jobs to our community, and we're going to be able to hire X number of people. Nobody ever says, wait a minute, why is the government, you know, isn't that too much money to government? Nobody ever hear the other side. It's always, hey, it's a good thing. And we never think of it in terms of, okay, that's just us. They're just using more money to, you know, not to say that we don't need it, whether it's defense or whatever, you know, it is, but.
And Pastor Burns, one of the things that is on the table, I'm glad you brought this up, is the new FBI building, which is bigger than the Pit, was going to be bigger than the Pentagon. The Republican Party does not want that to be built. And they're saying to the Democrat Party, that will make up some of the money that you want spent on programs for the needy.
Yeah, but I like, I want to go back to Tanya and Pastor Burns. Mm-hmm. We're trying to say, like, people got to choose between rent, food, even the things that they're going to have, right? Mm-hmm. In their daily life. But I'm going to say this. Let's look at our, we all in the same city, same county right now, right? Mm-hmm. Let's think about the industries that's in our city, right? We got manufacturing, right? We got health and human services, right? And we have, yeah, we got health and human services. Those are two major that drives Muskegon, right?
Yes, yeah.
Now, you talk about health and human services, a large portion when it comes to mental health, the hospitals, schools, and other spaces, city, municipalities, they get government funding.
Yes.
Right? So, because America, because Muskegon is an America town, right? We're talking about Charles Hackley weekend, where he brought 18 industries into a city, right? Mm-hmm. And created and mechanized Muskegon to a point where people like you and me, black and brown, that could exist in a space after slavery to come in and work and start a family, right? Mm-hmm. And what she said, we're in a space now that a lot of our funding streams in this actual county comes through the government. A large portion, a large percentage. I should have had that number down. A large percentage of the money that touched this county is coming from the government to run just those two industries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Police department, right? Police department, EMT, right? Paramedics, fire department. Oh, we need another truck. We need this. We got to get some new hydrants. Oh, money. They stopped the money. I can't hire everybody, or mm-hmm. can't get a new police car. We can't. The money they gave us to fix the roads and the heights, we got to get, they stopped it. They mm-hmm. they cut that money off, right? So all these things and all these factors come into play when you just look at it at a micro level of just our city.
Yes.
Right? Look at that micro level. And then mm-hmm. you can go to macro and say, how many other cities that has the same demographic, same population will be affected in small town America?
And to mention that we have a company here that makes military parts, a couple.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
Government funded.
Yes.
And so all this is depending on a bunch of whack-a-mole in Washington. I'm serious. These guys that are sitting up here playing games with people that have to make a decision on buying medicine and food, or we need fire trucks, or we need this, and they're sitting up. And can you imagine that if this doesn't get solved, that, like you said, that your 401k, boom, the next day, 50%, what you've been putting away.
Pastor, go ahead, Pastor.
I have a question for you. Do you, you know, like these things we talk about, the economy changing those things, is it, I have a hard time believing most people in Congress don't know these things, but the politics has superseded it.
Right.
Or do you think there's a thing, say, I'm one of those people that think, no, I don't have a problem with the political process. I have a problem with it when it's not working. You know, I don't mind the give and take. But do you feel like most people, you know, we talk about the economy that's happened, they have to have the same information presented to them. They got bright people working for them on their staffs, these think tanks that are talking about the economy. And they may have different approaches, but if they know these same things, is it just the politics has just over superseded all these things? I'm sure if we go back 100 years, I mean, I know people are complaining about the debt ceiling, you know, my God, you know, $1 trillion of debt, how could the government do it? But is it just that politics has gotten that skewed that they're just dismissing these things for the sake of, you know, ignoring our economy and how it should be growing and changing?
I mean, you got to think most of the economists at least had a minor or a major in politics, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because you
right.
think about
it was pretty easy to get a couple classes, yeah.
Right.
You think about their governing board. Who on their governing board? Who's sitting on their governing board when it comes to like a multi-billion dollar company, right? Mm-hmm. So who sits on that, right? Who's helping making policy and decisions for their companies to say, you got to go ahead and go on and do that. We make sure we allocated so many billion dollars. We voted for your company to have so many millions of dollars so you could do this, right? That happens, right?
Yeah.
It's prestigious people that sit on boards all the time. So then they can drive an initiative to say, hey, vote for this for me. And got this check when we produce this product or when we produce this thing. So but that's it. You can't just be an economist and not understand the politics. You can't be politics and not understand the economist.
I felt attacked about that as a former poli sci major. I felt a little bit attacked, but
going back to Houston, Texas, Michael Anthony Smith. It's the politics.
It's the driving force. It's something I do want to. It's a person I really love when it comes to what Melvin said, and I thought about him. He's so good at doing this. And he wrote this book by the name, who's big time economist, right? Hedge fund manager. So you know those sometimes those guys can be everywhere, right?
Yeah.
In those spaces. His name is Ray Dalio, right? And he got this book called The Changing World Order. And he talks about all these broken systems that sends our economy like this. Like you got these loops, right? So what does a loop do? It takes a dip, it goes down, then it comes out and it goes back again. But then depending on your projection on what you do in this loop, a loop can either go down, 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 or you can do things to make it go up. So like I said earlier, when the dip comes, what's gonna be the decision and the determining factor when it comes to economics and politics to make the dip go up, right? So then when that loop happens again, it'll spiral. But Ray Dalio he does a good job of explaining how historical factors. That's why I brought it up. I gotta give him credit. He's super smart when it comes to economic systems and understanding politics and the governance of the governing bodies on how those systems move and how they interact, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So whether it's gonna be a clash or it's gonna be some type of interaction where those systems are going to work together, and eventually the dip's going to help the progression happen, and then now this system's going to be sustained instead of cutting. And that's, I think we're in that space. Not a guy's super smart, he's been around forever, but he's good at looking at those systems change and being able to manage that. And somebody that's been around long enough to see the recessions, to see hedge funds disappear, but for him to sustain and to move on, I got to give him credit because I'm thinking about what an economy is at now. And in the book that he had, The Changing World, he talks about how those systems were created and how they are old tools. Mm-hmm. So I got to give him credit.
Got to go to borders blowing up. Benita, thank you, said the prisons are an entire industry in and of themselves. It's a pipeline of the industry and division. And then Michael from Texas said, okay, I'll be up there next week to solve the problem.
Come on.
All right, come on up, Michael, because we need this problem solved. So Chauncey, okay, so it's 2:49. We're running out of time. And so is Washington. Okay. So them playing right now, making people nervous, literally is basically messing with a lot of people's money, number one. And number two, are you surprised that the Department of Treasury says that the technology is so old that they cannot decide who gets their paychecks first? I have a hard time believing that, but are you surprised by that?
I'm not surprised by it, but that when you think about it, like, what are the indicators, right? Mm-hmm. You know, we in a certain place. It should be red flag, red flag, red flag, red flag. What do we do? And how do we, you know, what's your alternative plan? How does your system work when the inevitable is coming? What do you do? I know they got a strategic plan. I know they had to have one. So it's like when you think about, oh, we don't know who we're going to pay. But like I said, it's going back to the politics and the economics and saying like, hey, we can use this because we want to create this dip. We want to create higher prices, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like getting priced out of automobiles right now, right? Yeah. Think about that. The price of a new car is totally different, or a home, or like the issue we're facing in our county right now. I'm gonna give you a great example where politics and economics is a mix up. It's a great example. All right, we want to create affordable housing locally, right? Mm-hmm. That's an issue. But then when we look at our county, what's the per capita for a family that's in poverty, right? $28,000. That's a family of four people. Mm-hmm. So then what's the per capita when it comes to family that's not in poverty? $58,000. So look at that discrepancy right there, right? So it's going to take government funding, politics. What new builds you going to build that somebody that's at $28,000 could say I'm in affordable housing, or is affordable housing being based on the $58,000 and say we don't want the $28,000 people living in our community? So how do you outsource that population? Well, they can't sustain. I can't afford this rent. I'm getting government help and I'm getting my job and I can't make it. Well, they said it's affordable housing, but is it $58,000 or is it $28,000? Or I don't want you here, so I'm setting it on $58,000 and I'm using policy through the government, and we're going to vote this way, and we're going to cause all this other stuff to go on. So about time it really happens. That's just local for us, right? Mm-hmm. What is it based on? What is it based on, the politics or economics? Is it based on economics? I think it was our cutting point should be 38. Yeah. But if it's based on politics or whoever in, we're going to make it 58. We're going to build houses on $58,000 income because we want to change the demographics of our community. So what does that do to the tax base, to the people that live there, and what the people can do in that city and how they can participate in the politics when you move a group out and you move a group in?
Okay, so, Melvin. We got to get to a lot of questions. So, Melvin, you read the questions. I'll screen them and get them out to them.
Okay, let me get up here. Okay, Jake Kilgore. America has always been a well, that's the way it's always been, type of nation. So it doesn't surprise me that their technology is old.
Okay, next one.
WUVS 103.7, The Beat. A capitalist society like America is not normally in the interest of the people, but in the interest of those who are in power. This is why the income and equity gap is so wide today.
Let's start there.
Well, they articulated that well.
Okay.
Let's start there, Chancey. Let's take those two first. Okay, like said, the capital. Let's take this question.
Go ahead.
Let's take that one first. So what do you think about that, Chancey?
The wealth gap. They just explained what I just said when I talked about what's quote unquote affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. So and affordable housing? Based on what indicators, though?
Let's talk about indicators, like before we go anywhere else. Chancey, talk about indicators.
So when you say that, we talk about, all right, standard of living, right?
Mm-hmm.
How much it costs? What's your bills? Insurance, right?
Mm-hmm.
How many people in your household? All these things, savings. All these things that indicate, okay, we might have a problem, because you think about it, when the stimulus and all the other things was going out, there was a large savings, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Then
yep.
Inflation hit because the corporations was like, hey, man, we want our money back.
They got money.
So raise the prices because they got more money. But they like, I only gave them like $1,200 like twice or three times. Majority of the people, but oh, we got a lot of people that got the SBA loans. We got this, we got that. But that's not a large population. You had to know somebody, or you had to know a secret. So mm-hmm. then when you leverage the system, when I say indicators, okay, the inflation gonna be for everybody. Mm-hmm. Not for the people that just got the benefit or what they needed. We're gonna make inflation reach equity. It's gonna reach everybody, but the surplus only gonna be able to be with a certain group of people. So when I say indicators, we're talking about Again, what's affordability? But then what's the poverty level when it comes to knowing that space? But then we're talking about, we got to raise the debt ceiling for who though? That's the end. Who are we raising it for?
Another question, Melvin.
Jay Kigel, if we don't solve the affordable housing problem, the demographics of the Heights will start to change.
Thank you, Jay. And that's what we talked about earlier. Is it 58,000? Is it 28?
I couldn't agree with Jay Kilgo more. I know he's in the real estate business, but you know, and Charles, you hit the nail on the head. We talk about that affordable housing thing. You know, Muskegon is building houses $180,000, $190,000. Again, $28,000 a year, you can't afford $180,000 house. And so I always say there's a place for houses that still cost $50,000 to $90,000. There still has to be, you know, because again, these are the same people that work at every single business and factory in town that may have a larger family or carrying larger debt, or may have some other outstanding expenses that can't afford that house. And so there's a market. And again, what you said about the housing shortage is not, that's an issue that's starting to come to the forefront in our community, but other communities have had the same problem.
Yes, it's everywhere. Like you hear this in our state. Like you say, you go to the other side of the state, in the east side, they struggling with affordable housing. So it's not like I'm just on here just talking, right?
Right.
It's going on everywhere. It's a small town America. It's in the urban areas, and it's hitting us so hard that where's the government programming to say that, okay, I want my community to look a certain way. So then if I leverage this system, and I've seen certain places do it for police officers, nurses, teachers, right? Mm-hmm. People that work in these industries, I want you to live in this zip code, right? Mm-hmm. So how do we use politics to drive our economics in a way where we can change the zip code to fit it, where we got people that's pouring into the economy, productive citizens, that's working with that population, that's at poverty level, so then we can have real communities, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
That's my issue for raising the debt ceiling. Like, what are we going to put in place to open doors for people coming from other countries, right? But to sustain the economy, but also to grow it. Because if you put me in the proximity of somebody that's doing well and they got food, clothing, and shelter, they understand how to live in a sustainable lifestyle, and you start seeing that neighbor or that person in proximity to you on how they carry themselves, how they dress, how they spend, how they live, that triggers something in your mind. That's, oh, they look like me, or what do they do for a living? Or then you're like, oh, y'all going, we going to vote. I'm like, what's that? What's voting? You know, the guy that's making $20, I just go to work. Like, what's voting? Oh, I'm telling you, if you go vote, we'll be able to do this to this neighborhood, right? So it does something when you're able to take the politics and the economics and find a way to be interactive in a positive way and not the blaming, going in a blaming space. So we just got to use that leverage to get people in and say, hey, we want to make our communities look different, but also our country and our world should be also interacting in a way so then we can have this economy that's an indication that we have in progress as we are looping and we're solving the problems with new tools, not old tools. Because where are people coming from? You can afford a house. You can afford a house. You can afford a house. Where are they coming from? Are they going to be all vacation homes, right? Oh, you know, when you live here in the wintertime, I bought this house for this much because I lived in California and it was, this bungalow is $1 million in California. Oh, I can get it for $249 here. I sold my $1 million property and I bought a one bedroom in California and I got a vacation house in Muskegon for $240,000. My old house is $1 million. Those are case in points that's going on right now.
Yes.
Michigan is becoming a tourism state because of political and economic systems that's not driving community anymore. Right? Mm-hmm. When we look at it, let's get to the basic level of it. When you think about schools, right? We could look at demographics of schools. Like something for me, I always look at, I work in Muskegon public, right? So I look and say, okay, who lives in the district where the kids go to school at, right?
Yeah.
Who can afford the houses around the school? So does that displace our students, or does that support our students with the people that's in that vicinity, mm-hmm. that perimeter, right? So if we're producing affordable housing for our citizens to live within the communities that their kids go to school in, what does that do for our whole community? When you build a new house that I can afford to be here and I can keep my kid in this school district from K-12, that's another political and an economic issue, but it's not a school issue. It's in those two spaces. Mm-hmm. School can't control that. The school board, or it's got to be, as we're raising this debt ceiling, what policy are we putting in place to affect small town America? Because that's the space we got to go in. We tried to create these urban sprawling communities, right? We tried to create suburbs, right? Suburbs failing. They trying to come back. They like, we can't afford it.
Okay.
I would like.
Hold on. Okay. Melvin, read this in there.
Jennifer Ross says, positive interactive. That'll preach.
Okay. So Chauncey, it's 3:01. So we got to end the show. So next week, if this don't pass, I need to have you back on the show because it's going to be a whole lot of cussing and crying going on. All right. Listen, everybody, it's 3:01. We went over our time. Chauncey Williams, thank you so much. And listen, everybody, go sow a seed in somebody's life. You can change somebody's life. Take care. God bless. Chauncey, hopefully we don't see you next week.
Man, I hope not. I'm praying and for the good to come. And I appreciate you guys. I appreciate our citizens in Muskegon and Hikes, countywide. We're just on here trying to make sure that our voice are heard. And we try to make sure that people voice, student voices, community voice is relevant when you casting a vote, or if you're somebody that's holding the gavel to make a vote. Let's change it at the micro level, so then everybody can learn from us. So thank you again, guys. Appreciate you.
All right. Take care. God bless. See you.